It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy's here. Lori Gill's here. And the triumphant return of Alex Lindsay. Very first thing we're going to find out is what Alex thinks of the new Mac Pro. Also, the public betas for iOS 13 and Catalina are here. We'll take a little tour. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 667, recorded Tuesday, June 25th, 2019. I'm the boss. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage makes the home buying process work for you. Their award-winning client service and support will help you every step of the way. Get started online today at rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. And by Capterra. Find the right tools to make an informed software decision for your business. Visit Capterra's free website at capterra.com/MacBreak. And by Gazelle, the trusted online marketplace for buying and selling used devices. Visit gazelle.com/twit to buy a certified pre-owned device and get 10% off your purchase. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. There's a lot of news today. And the biggest news is Alex Lindsay's back in studio with us. We don't know how long he'll be here, but we're thrilled
to
have
you.
Yeah. And Renee took, he saw you were going to be here. He left.
He's like, I don't want to.
No, he wanted some time off. It's perfect time for him to do it. We've got Lori Gill here from representing iMore. She's managing editor over there. Hi, Lori.
Hi, how's it going?
It's great. Always good to
it's
see
good
you.
It's good to see Alex back.
I know.
It's good to see you, too. It's good to be back.
Lori is your official replacement, Alex. So
very good.
But it's good to see you both in the same room. We know that you're not the same. And, of course, from Boston Public Radio, Andy Inako is also here today. Show of hands, how many of you installed Catalina? The public beta came out yesterday.
I had to choose between the iPad, the new version of iOS, or the new version of macOS, and I realized that I couldn't have both platforms failing at the same time.
Good thinking.
Also, I was more excited about iPadOS. So
yeah. Well, and that's
but
the other one.
You can't use Sidecar without Catalina, so I don't know.
I know.
So I did my MacBook Air Catalina, and I left my iMac Pro Mojave just for that very reason. I don't want to be completely without. But I did immediately upgrade my iPad to iOS 13, which also came out. Public beta for both a month early, or at least a few days early.
A lot earlier than we expected.
Yeah. And my experience has been there pretty stable. I haven't had any problems on Catalina, on macOS. And the iOS 13, the only issues I've had is one app, Asphalt 5, wouldn't run.
And that's just a game, so.
Yeah, just a game. Andy.
Well. See, in a world with Pokemon Go and the new Harry Potter game, I think now we can say there's some games that are just a game, and some places where I insist that you correct this problem immediately.
It's Asphalt 9, by the way, not 5. Asphalt 9.
Oh, but yeah, but 5 was so long ago.
5 was like 2015 or something. One of the things I like that is available on both is the new Find My, which feels like a truncated sentence.
Find my.
And the reason is it's Find My Friends plus Find My iPhone plus Find My Mac. It's kind of cool. I can actually, I don't know how I can show you this. But and by the way, I'm running dark mode. Did you do the dark mode yet?
Of course.
It's pretty dark.
First thing.
None darker. That goes to 11 darkness. So that's the map. So that's devices. That's like the old Find My Mac. But there's a tab for people. This is straight out of Harry Potter. I could tap my son's name, and it shows me he's at work. That's wild. That is dangerous, I think.
Well, how is it different than Find My Googly. Friends? As far as
it's combined. There's some additional features, but they combined it. Yeah.
I never had Henry on Find My Friends. In fact, no. One of the problems I had with Find My Friends is nobody would do it with me. So it is picking up devices or contacts some other way. I think they're in my family group. Mm-hmm. So anybody who's in my family group, I can see their location now.
Well, and that's interesting. Yeah. In my family group, Find My Friends has it all, but it's not combined with Find My iPhone.
I have to look and see. Maybe I just, because I stopped using Find My Friends because somebody would ever allow me to find them.
Yeah.
But maybe that's a new thing that they added. I'll look on my iPhone, which has not been upgraded.
They do use a different technology. Renee would actually be so great at telling you the details. Different technology with the way they ping devices now through Find My. It's battery saving, but also just kind of uses a better triangulator. So I'm guessing that your family probably was part of your Find My previously, and you just didn't notice it, because I think you still give permission to be tracked.
I'm looking on my phone. They are. Yeah. Wait a minute. No, Abby. Oh, no. No, no. Okay. This is interesting. On Find My friends on the iPhone, on an upgraded, let me see. Abby can see my location. No, it's the same. You're right. It's the same. I can't see her location, but she can see mine. So the only person who allows me to see his location is my son.
What a nice guy.
Well, he does work at Twit, so it's not much of a location. It's like, oh, yeah, he's down the hall. I guess if he weren't at work, I would know.
You'd know.
Yeah.
If he called in sick, you'd know. Where if he was down at the beach or something.
So dark mode in iOS 13, that's nice. And there's also a automatic version. I think this is on Catalina too, where you can say dark mode at night, light mode in the day. I don't understand that completely. Is it dark in your house at night and light in your house at the day? I guess it is. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's dark at night and light during the day. Yeah.
It is?
Yeah.
Okay, because I have the curtains drawn. I have no idea.
And theoretically, have you tried the mouse?
Oh, I should.
And the accessibility?
Can you get me a mouse? Yeah, I'd like to try that.
That was the thing I was the most excited about. I haven't tested yet.
I tried some of the gestures.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard to get the... So you can now select text by dragging across, but they haven't turned off the old method of selecting text. So that pops up. Triple finger swipe for undo or pinch. Or it's complicated.
Right.
They do a pop-up that shows you, is this a wired mouse? I need a wired mouse. All right. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, I have in my hands a wired mouse.
And you have the USB-C to...
Yes. Yeah, I tried it. It doesn't. If you're expecting this to be like mouse support for the iPad,
that's exactly what I'm expecting.
It's not that. It is definitely an accessibility feature that people who don't require this accessibility feature might enjoy using. But it didn't feel like a mouse interface on the iPad the way that when you plug a mouse into like an Android phone or an Android tablet, it feels like you've got a mouse controlling your touch surfaces. But it's better. It's good.
I'm trying to find it.
I think we've had this conversation a couple of times that it's not called mouse support. It's called pointer device support. And that's specifically because Apple still hasn't implemented full mouse support on, now it's called iPadOS. But it does give you that precision click and drag that you can't really do with your fingers as well. So I think it's a big deal that even that is supported, just because, you know, before we were trying to use our fingers and our, you know, hobbit hands were struggling to grab things and move things. And this precision pointer helps us kind of like even, you know, drawing things or something like that in the apps that will allow it. I think it's pretty cool. So definitely, it's a step in the right direction. I think this is really kind of the next step in actually having full mouse support. Apple, I think, decided they would sort of put it in the accessibility section because it is a really good benefit for people who can't afford separate accessibility devices for the pointers. They can just use any mouse to do it. So that's a really great sort of addition for them. But it also kind of gives the public a chance to test out how that works and how it feels, and then they can maybe move on from there. So I have a feeling we're going to see mouse support soon, maybe in a year.
I agree. I agree. I think it is a help for people. Again, I've only used it for about 45 minutes, but in that time, it made me realize that if in the future I will do text editing with a mouse connected to my iPad, because it is better than not having a mouse at all.
I just want to make sure
that if you read commentary saying, "Oh well, the mouse support really stinks. I can't follow the cursor and doesn't really work." Like, well, it's not meant to be mouse support. Like Lori said, this is an accessibility feature that makes it more usable for people who are going to have problems using a touchscreen only device. But like she said, this is a good indication of how good the iPad could be if Apple were to embrace full mouse support. And I'm sure that she's right in that Apple is watching very, very carefully to see how people are reacting to this.
So we're still looking for the setting. It's not, I don't know.
How about the file?
Okay. It's under accessibilities and it should be touch. It's under the touch section, and then you'll find touch devices, I think, and then that's where it's called pointing devices.
I don't have my
iOS 13 device in front of me to hand pick.
It'd be nice
if
when you plugged in a mouse, it said, "Oh,
that's crazy."
It is okay. So there's a good reason it's under accessibility. It isn't really a generally mouse. Files is great. I have tried. I already plugged a USB key into it. It saw it. It read it. I was able to plug my camera card into it. I mean, this is very nice. Yep. That's a big improvement.
It's exactly what you would hope that files should have been on the iPad. Let's say after the first year or the second year, because it is always it is the hangnail on the thumb of every single iPad user, just dealing with files on this thing. I didn't have time to really rock and roll with it to see how well it works with my SMB servers and stuff like that. But just the fact that I've got my USB key and I can just move files from one place to another on it was like, okay, Mr. iPad Pro, I know that you've been like spending a lot of time docked in that shelf. You're going to be going out of the house a lot more now, I think.
We've been looking for it. Scooter X says settings, accessibility, touch under the physical and motor section.
Get a Macintosh.
It's like you have a different.
It's
like your accessibility is.
I'm pretty sure that's iOS 13, because the biggest thing, and you see it immediately, is you can now swipe your notifications over onto the home screen. The home screen grid is smaller icons, lots more icons on there. And in fact, let me show you this, because this is awesome. Actually, you know what we can do? John, why don't you get the Apple TV up on your switcher? Because I can cast this to the living room. So we could show you what it looks like. That'd probably be the best way of doing it. Yeah, we can't find this. But that is 13, right? Because it's dark.
It's dark.
Right.
Accessibility. Oh, here it is. Physical, motor, touch. No, we had gone too deep. Assistive touch. Is that what it is?
Mm-hmm.
And then pointing devices.
Pointing devices.
USB optical mouse. So it's on there now. Customize additional buttons. So I could, okay, I'm left click is a single tap. Okay, so you actually have to manually custom. Right click could be, what, a double tap? Yeah, let's do that. All right. I have a scroll wheel. Can it see that? Yeah, it does. I can make a click on the scroll wheel be pinch. That'll be useful. Anyway, so yeah, you can assign it commands. But I don't know. You don't see a mouse on the screen. It's not like you suddenly have a mouse cursor.
We set the settings, but we have to turn it on.
I think I turn it on. Pointing devices, USB optical and mouse connected. It sees it. I don't know. Anyway.
Here, I'll go play with it some more.
Yeah. Well, let me show this first. Okay. Did you get the Apple TV up? Because I just love this.
No, I'm not seeing anything coming up. I'm just seeing a screensaver, so...
Let me go do screen mirroring and see what I can find.
Oh, there we go. All right.
So this is the new home screen, which I really like. So you can see you get more, icons on there. But also now we get notifications. You can, in the notifications, you can pin two of them. So I'll show you when I edit. Keep on home screen. Keep the Today view on the home screen next to your apps. And then you can choose. I've got weather and calendar pinned. You can pin up to two of them. But if there's two you like, and those will always show up. And then if you swipe up, so there's my calendar and weather. If you swipe up, you'll get whatever else you've put into your. This is great. So there is no longer a swipe left. There's nothing over there anymore. The Today panel is there always. Your battery, your all of the stuff that you want to have there. I think that's a very nice feature, I think.
So much of this is just basic. Here's how the screen works. It's a revolutionary thing where it's no longer like the iPhone. It really is like a desktop metaphor where you're going to have a home page that is not just an app launcher. It is kind of like home base, the concierge for the rest of the device. And you can also have additional workspaces that you can set up for whatever task that you've got going on at that moment. For people who use pretty much every other operating system, including macOS, it might seem, oh, wow, you mean that I can do that same thing I've been doing for 7 or 8 years. But it really is the sort of thing that makes you think of this as, hey, wow, I'm using an iPad for productivity and I'm actually getting away with it. And I really did, like, over the course of just like a day, start thinking about my iPad as something that has parity with my MacBook and my ThinkPad and my Chromebook as something that I'm going to take to a work environment and just work for eight or 9 hours on, as opposed to, aren't I clever? I managed to find a way to do an entire day's work on an iPad.
I should point out my iPad battery has depleted pretty much more quickly, noticeably much more quickly than it did before I put iOS 13 on it. That is one of the things Apple has yet to optimize.
Yeah, exactly. Power optimization comes last, so don't worry about that if people are seeing that.
Yeah, but just be aware that's one of the things that you might be paying.
This is one of the reasons why you maybe don't want to put it on something that's mission critical.
Can you show the? There it is. That's what it looks like. There's the mouse.
Yep. I made it big, so it's.
Well, that's what you probably want, and now you can. Can you click? Left click is a tap.
Super. Hold on.
You could change the tracking speed. Do you want to change the tracking?
Yeah, because it's almost impossible.
Turn it all the way down. Yeah, okay.
That's too much.
Yeah. And also notice that it's not an arrow pointer. It is a circle with a point in the middle of it. It is really for targeting a touch target.
Yeah.
So its real purpose is very, very clear there.
Yeah. Even the small cursor is fairly hefty. You can change the color. Nice. That's really, again, an accessibility feature for people who are colorblind and things like that. I think this is, this is not my mouse support or trackpad support, but, I don't know, Alex, are you going to like it?
Yeah.
Alex likes it.
I mean, the question is whether people will take advantage of it. There are certain apps that obviously
you
could use it, like Numbers, OmniGraffle. Yeah. Like, it's just one of the, like, I use OmniGraffle a lot to build wiring diagrams. And on the Mac, you need to have, especially doing wiring diagrams, there's like a whole bunch of connections like this. And doing that with your finger and trying to get the right selection is just not usable on the iPad, for complex.
It'd be better for pCalc probably because some of those buttons are kind of small.
Exactly. And Numbers I find hard to get in and out of the cells. Like Pages and Keynote, I actually build on the iPad without any trouble. But with Numbers, it's too hard to get to the cell options.
We should also mention that there isn't an easy way to go back once you go to iOS 13. It's a big hassle going back. So,
If anybody needs some advice on that, I wrote some articles on iMore about how to downgrade, but make sure that you archive your iOS system before you get the beta, not after, because it's too late. So archive a backup of iOS 12 and find it on iMore. You just do a Google search, and ours will probably be the first to come up, or at least one of the first.
And a good reason not to go to Catalina, because iTunes is gone to Catalina. So, but
you have to do everything in Finder.
Yeah, I presume you could still make an encrypted archive of your.
Yep, you can. In fact, the only difference is that it's in Finder instead of iTunes. Everything looks the same when you actually plug in your device and you go to your device settings in Finder. It looks exactly the same.
Good.
So, it's actually really easy and really intuitive. It's just in a different place now.
I was a little overconfident and I did not back up. So.
Good luck.
Screw it up, Alex.
I'm going to give this back to you.
No, it's fine. I'll show you a couple other things. You can now run more than one window of the same application. That's fantastic.
The multi-window section is mind-blowing. You can not just have two of the same at once, but you can have tabs of three different, four different, 10 different things popped up, and you can also have that with split screen with two of the same apps. It's incredible. I'm really into the multitasking section with a multi-tab Windows app. It's probably my favorite addition to iPadOS.
Show my screen again, John, and I can show you. So I've got Safari open. One of the things you get is this new thing where you have not only a sidebar, but you can have multiple sidebars open,
yeah,
as you can see. And I can switch between those just like that, which is... That's between iTunes and my Photos album. And I can make one take over the whole screen, I think, as I remember, by dragging it up. That's one of the things I have a little trouble with getting. There we go. By dragging it up like that. If I drag the dock up, I can then take Safari and make it a half of this page. Let's see if I can do this. I guess maybe it's just a question of getting used to it. I don't know.
Yeah.
No, it's,
you
it's,
definitely
it's
have
a little,
to.
Oh, I just resprung it. So you can show that. that is the finder or the launcher respringing, springboards respringing. So that happened a bunch of times. I now have both a mouse pointer and a finger pointer. So let me disconnect the mouse because that's making me nuts. I think that with some practice, what is that? Is that?
That's assistant touch.
Oh, so that was what was connected to the...
you just have to disable assistant touch to get rid of that little thing.
I'll leave it there for a little bit. So now if I wanted to put another Safari, I would just drag that here. And then it would be half of it. Or how do I get it? Yeah, there we go. So there's another Safari.
And then look at that great little thing. That's giving you the option to choose which Safari page did you want to make.
Because I have three.
I love that.
That's really sweet.
Yeah. This is,
and I think I can do a third. As I remember, I can even have
a
little...
You can do a tab.
Tab. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see if I can do that again. Just going to take practice. Because we're not used to this so far, right?
And unlike the last revision to how Slide Over and that stuff works, it really is worth the practice. Again, I really, like everybody else, I have not had more than a few hours worth of experience with this. I have less than others. But just messing around with it, it was so easy to figure out how this is no longer a productivity problem that it was just a year ago. The reason why I'm using a Chromebook for a lot of my I just want something tablet like while I'm out of the office for a few hours was just this ability that I just need to keep a Twitter client on the side of the screen. I don't even need like multiple overlapping windows, or I just need to have two web pages open at the same time that I can look at and reference from. And it's not only a solution to the problem, it's not just catching up, it really is an elegant solution for dealing with multiple apps at the same time in one window without making one third of your brain power have to go to Windows management. I really love this.
So you think it'll be as good as having a windowing operating system, that it's sufficient?
Within the context of what you're using a tablet for, that there are still laptops out there, there's still alternatives out there. When I have an iPad as the device I'm taking out of the house, it's because I know I'm not going to need Mac OS. I'm not going to need a desktop operating system with all the things you can do with like window workflows. What I need is there's a task that I usually want to do one task at a time, but sometimes that task is enhanced by having another information from another app handy and visible. Without having to, because I don't have a mouse on this really on this iPad, it was such a big deal to suddenly have to. I can't overlap two windows and just click into another window when I want it. I will have to like tab between two different apps, and I can't really see both at the same time. But the ability to use a split screen in a really effective way, and to be able to switch between what that second app is going to be really quickly and efficiently, and make it not look like, hey, here's a tricked out feature that we've added, but this is a natural way of how the iPad OS lets you interact with applications. I think that Apple has done an outstanding job on this, and it's not just this feature right here right now in the beta, but it's also an indication of what the next version of iPad OS is going to be when they see how people work with this, see what they like about it, what they're not using about it, and then use that to evolve it into the next iteration of it. It really is was an exciting few hours that I spent yesterday with iPad OS, because I'm as much as I love my iPad. I've only been taking it out and putting it in my bag when there was something I wanted to do that day that was only really good to use an iPad for. Whereas now it's gotten me excited about keeping that thing charged all the time and getting back into the groove of using it.
Here's typing and swiping. So this is Notepad. And they are doing a good job, I think, for discovery. They're popping up little things. So here's speed up your typing by sliding your finger across letters to compose a word. This is the little floating keyboard, which is wild. It's an iPhone-sized keyboard, and it can float around. And if I start typing, this is swiping. You'll see it does swiping, which is great. It also has really surprisingly good dictation. So this is the kind of thing where you might take the keyboard, reduce it in size, float it around, start dictating. I mean, this is pretty cool. Now, I don't know how to get out of this. But I'm sure there's a really easy way.
The dictation looks fantastic.
That little button below the space bar, I think, gets you back to normal.
I'm dragging it around. Maybe if I drag it up to the top or drag it down to the bottom. Oh, there we go. Now it's the full size keyboard. And you get into it because there's a keyboard menu right here, so you can choose floating. Right there, that's interesting. Let's play.
So for all the kids who only know how to type with their thumbs, you just put that in the far corner, right?
Yeah, and this now is
you
can sit thumb there typing is bad.
Type away.
There's also I can just drag my finger to select text. That's a big improvement.
I really like that a lot. I think it's very very nice. I have a really hard time with selecting text to copy. So I really like the way they changed that and made it a lot easier to work with.
You can also once you've got this, it's easy to drag. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I also have trouble with the copy and paste, the pinching to zoom in and out.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've just never been very good with any kind of three-finger gesture. I think I could get used to it. But I see myself just kind of falling back on the way you can do it now, which is also still going to be in it. It's not mandatory that you have to use the three finger. I see myself just kind of going back with the way they had been doing it before instead of teaching myself the three fingers. It just never felt comfortable.
So I did it, but I did it. It took me four times to do it. So I'm putting three fingers down and now I pinch to cut.
That's picking it up, in other words.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I picked it up. Now I'm going to select a different area, and I'm going to unpinch, and there it pasted, and it pasted with the formatting, which is cool.
That's the Zach King pinch. I pick it up and I throw it away.
Pick it up. I wish that kind of felt that intuitive. But
exactly. This is like a joke where you have to explain the joke.
Right.
That means it was never really a joke to begin with.
Right.
It doesn't make me enamored to actually start to learn this stuff because. Yeah.
And fortunately, there's a very easy way to do it. You haven't lost.
Exactly. Yeah. It's there for people who want to learn it. People who don't want to learn it, it's not going to interfere.
Right.
You're right.
Right.
That's also available on iOS 13. So your iPhone, you'll be able to do that on your iPhone too. And the selecting of text thing. Very nice on a small screen.
Oh, I bet. So that's an important point you just made, Lori, which is some of these features are iPad OS, like the multi-window features. And some of them are iOS 13, like the cutting, pasting, swiping, swooping.
And there are some things that you wouldn't think are available for iOS 13 for your phone that are. And if I remember correct, I think... jump drive support, I think, is available on iPhone.
Wow. There
was one more that I was really surprised to find out. I think it was also pointer support, so mouse support. I think that one is also on iPhone. I could be wrong. Anybody out there who's listening and can correct me on that. But I remember being surprised by a couple of features that I thought were only going to be on iPad that ends up being supported on both, which is pretty cool.
Nice. Any other features we should mention? I mean, there are a lot.
Yeah,
I think you should talk about Sidecar because it's a really cool feature.
Okay, I can't demo it because I don't have a Catalina Mac. So tell me how that works.
It's sort of like mirroring. So when you're on Catalina and you're on iPad OS or possibly that's when I can't remember it. That one might be also. iOS 13.
It wouldn't make sense on a phone because it's really a second screen feature.
Yeah. Let's assume that it's iPad OS because I can't remember for sure. Yeah. So you've got your iPad on iPad OS 13, you got your Mac on Catalina, and you're just working on your Mac, and you suddenly decide, you know what, I need a second screen real quick. You click on the mirror icon that you already have for mirroring to like your Apple TV or something like that. And instead of choosing Apple TV, you choose your iPad. Bam, you're using it as a second screen. You can choose to either mirror or use it as a second screen. And then you just can drag and drop just like you do on any monitor that has a second screen. Move your chats over to your iPad or, you know, whatever, like a movie that you're watching, anything you want, you can just drag it over to the second screen. And with pencil support, there's a lot of apps that will support actual drawing on the iPad, even though it's a Mac app, which is pretty fascinating. We got to see a demo of that at WGC. And I haven't actually tried it yet, but I know what it looks like, and it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's a game changer for me. Particularly if they extend it to the phone as well, the ability to throw user interface elements onto the second device could be a game changer. It's everything that I would have wanted the OLED bar, the touch bar on the new MacBooks to be. It's like, not, don't give me like little like tic tac like buttons. Allow me to have like a scroller controller. Allow me to have like a slider on an iPad or on a phone. That could absolutely transform the way I use my Mac.
Well, and with a MacBook Air or a MacBook, having a second screen that's the same size as the laptop screen, it means you've got a pretty decent setup with just an iPad and a
laptop. And one that you could draw with.
Yeah.
As Lori was saying. It's just
like, I think that's very intriguing. For photography, you know, my MacBook Air probably by itself wouldn't be worth carrying around, but I love the iPad for photography.
Right.
Maybe those two together would make a pretty good combination as I travel.
And I've been going through a bunch of tutorials recently, and you just want another screen to watch the movies. And it's not quite like I'm taking these Xcode little online classes. And so the problem is that the screen is just, the video is just a little too big to have Xcode open and that at the same time.
And you could have it without the sidecar, but it's nice to be able to cut and paste from the tutorial into your main
computer. Well, and there's things you want to click on.
Yeah.
The problem is that there's a bunch of example files. And so when I get to that in the web page, I need to be able to click on it and have it download to the Mac, not to my iPad.
The iPad.
And then I have to use AirPlay and hope for AirDrop.
I've been using Duet that way for some time, and I really like it.
And I've had a lot of friends that have used Duet with Photoshop and a lot of other tools for years. And so I think this is going to be great. Not great for Duet, but great for everybody else.
Still, Duet's the only way to do it on Windows, although I did actually destroy my Windows 10 machine. When I said, oh, I should, last week, I said, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago, I said, oh, I should, let me put this on Windows 10. And I had to rebuild the whole machine. I had to, not the hardware, but I just trashed Windows and I had to reinstall everything. So be careful with Duet on Windows.
Not that you're bitter.
Not that I'm bitter or anything. And then
Go ahead. It's also a really nice reward for being into the Apple ecosystem. The idea that you have these two devices made by the same company, same companies made the hardware, same companies made the operating system, and it seems like such a simple thing for Apple to say, well, since you've purchased this really, really great display panel and it just happens to be inside an iPad, we'll let you use it as a display on your Mac. That's why there's always this. That's why it's not so much lock in on the Apple so much as it's a trade where they're saying I'm going to give up some ability to switch to another platform for messages, but if I have everything that has an Apple logo on it, they're going to find ways to let me use all of it in a really cool way.
Well, I have the Luna dongle, which is a hardware dongle. I don't know if this will Sherlock the Luna dongle, because I use that as so I put the Luna on my Mac in my office, and then I can use that Mac from my iPad anywhere in the building. I don't think Sidecar will do that.
No, it only goes 30 meters, I think it was.
And it's really to second screen on the Mac, not so much the Mac screen on your iPad, which is what the Luna lets you
do. But I could also see, I mean, really using this for professional artists, you know, like for instance with the new Mac monitor that you're not, even if it was touchscreen, you wouldn't want to touch it,
right?
And now you can pop it open. That's your Cintiq that you can, your little Cintiq that you can draw on.
Actually, let's take a break. We could talk about Catalina if you want, more about iOS 13 if there's more to say. Certainly want to talk about Project Catalyst apps. I haven't been able to try any of those yet. I don't even know if they're out yet, but I'd like to talk a little about those iOS apps on the Mac. And then one thing I really wanted to talk to you when the Mac Pro came out, I wanted to get Alex Lindsay's take on that. Yay. So you know what? Let's take a break. Mm-hmm. And then
I'm excited to hear
about
that.
We got an actual pro in-house. What does he think about the new Mac Pro? It's great to have you. Not Alex won't be here every week, but whenever you can, mm-hmm. it's always great to have you. And of course, now we have Lori Gill, so never come back, Alex.
They almost wouldn't let me on the show. We almost kicked Lori off the show because of you, Alex.
No, I think it's great to have you.
That's why Renee, being a gentleman, he said, "Well, I won't be on."
Well, this is up to you, Leo. Obviously, it's your call. But could we call Alex the panelist emeritus, just like when they kicked Jack Hanna out of the Columbus Zoo?
Yeah.
So he's still his official title. He's emeritus. Still comes back.
Yeah.
There you go.
No, he's not really emeritus because he created the show in the first place. So he does have kind of a pride of ownership. But also, anytime you want to be on, Alex is always welcome. And I'm never getting rid of Lori. So that's the way it is. Period. The end of story. And Renee would be here. We were planning to do a 5-person panel, but mm-hmm. Renee had some family obligations. It worked out perfectly. We're going to take a little break. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. I love Rocket Mortgage. They're back. We kind of missed them for a few months. Rocket Mortgage is from the folks at Quicken Loans. It is simply put the best way to get a home loan. You know, it's bad enough you got to find the right house, but finding the right mortgage is almost sometimes adding insult to injury. This is the most expensive thing you'll ever buy, the biggest check you'll ever write. It's great to have a partner like Rocket Mortgage. They're doing more to help you understand the home buying process so you can get exactly when you need in a timely, easy way. It's not just a mortgage, it's your mortgage. Their team of mortgage experts are obsessed with finding a better way. Their number one goal is to make the home buying process smoother for you. Rocket Mortgage has award-winning client service and support every step of the way. You're never alone. That's how Rocket Mortgage is changing the game with their industry-leading online lending technology. They've already helped millions of homeowners achieve their dream of homeownership. J.D. Power ranked Quicken Loans highest in customer satisfaction for primary mortgage origination. It's now 9 years running. Number one in mortgage servicing 5 years in a row. You want more J.D. Power award information, visit jdpower.com. You can see those awards. And when you work with Rocket Mortgage, you're going to get more than just a loan. Rocket Mortgage is more than just a lender. Go to rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. Take the first step toward the home of your dreams. A great place to get your home loan. Get on started online today at rocketmortgage.com/MacBreak. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org number 3030. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. I love their slogan. It says it all. Push button, get mortgage with Rocket Mortgage. Well, we're all sitting here a couple of weeks ago watching the WWDC keynote. And I'm just thinking, man, Alex Lindsay must be so happy right now. And actually, I texted you. And you said, yeah, it really is going to depend on how much I can get on a second mortgage on my house. Because you knew even then, this is not going to be cheap.
Well, and I think that one of the things that we have to really think about is what does pro mean? So when we say, you know, and this is truly a pro piece of hardware, you know, when we think about it as a personal item, like something I'm going to buy, it doesn't really add up. A lot of the time. I mean, that's a big piece of hardware. But you have to remember, like, when I was part of the time that I was at ILM, I was working on a Octane. SGI, back in the day, made these desktop computers called Octanes, and they were about $60,000 each. Wow. You know, and so, now while most of my time was spent on a Mac, I did have, you know, a period of time, and it was a very powerful computer.
Because it was tuned. It was designed to do that thing that you were doing.
It was designed to do high-end graphics. You know, right. It was really built for that. And I think that this is squarely focused on one group of people.
There's been a lot of attention to price, especially the monitor price and monitor stand price. I agree with you. It's a prices. You've always said this.
For a reference monitor, that is cheap.
Yeah.
So for the quality of if it does what they showed on stage, it is like half the cost of what we've spent on those kinds of monitors.
But even if it weren't, pros are spending No, it's worth it to them. They're spending either money from the client, in which case they don't care, or it's their business. So this is what they need to spend to do their job, and
it's an ROI conversation. So how much are you paying that person at the desk? How much are they producing? How much revenue are they generating? Right. How much more would they generate with a faster computer? Right. How much better work would they do?
If you're paying somebody $350 an hour, saving them half an hour saves big bucks.
You know, you walk into some of these post houses and you're paying thousands of dollars an hour for that place. And when you go in and pay $1,500 an hour, $2,000 an hour, you're going to expect a Mac Pro to be, you know, with a little light coming down on it. because they're not going to, literally, I believe in Hollywood, this is going to be one of those status symbols that you're going to put on there.
I think you're right.
You know,
I think that's why they gave it such a distinctive design, too. Yeah. If you see one of the new Mac Pros in the wild, you'll know you're seeing a Mac Pro. It looks like nothing else.
Right. And I think that, you know, I think that there was a lot of up and down about the stand. The thing about stands is that I don't even know where 90% of my stands are. You know, like
you don't use them.
We don't use them.
So I did bring that up. That you take the stands off and get a Visa mount.
Literally, the one thing I look at when I'm buying a monitor is, does it have a Visa mount? You know, and if it has a Visa mount, then we're set. And usually those stands go somewhere. What was nice was that they created the stand that they thought would be perfect,
but didn't bundle it
because it's expensive, and it created this whole market. There's this massive market. If I wanted to get into something, I would, you know, the 300 and below for a stand for that monitor is going to be a lucrative market.
There'll be many
500 and below.
There'll be many.
And they're going to be really cool designs, and they're going to be all kinds of other things that you can do with it because they've opened that market up because they didn't have one.
So the real question, honestly, for me was not the price, but what you thought of Apple's choices. Is the hardware, in other words, did Apple listen to what you wanted?
Oh, absolutely.
They made a rack mountable version. You wanted that.
They made it rack mountable. They made it modular. They made it very scalable.
How about the Vega Pro cards? Are those?
I understand why Apple is not putting NVIDIA cards in. I'm still bummed. You know, like not having, to me, at a professional graphics level, I still believe that NVIDIA is superior. And it's the way it manages the graphics chunks is just a much, from a game perspective, may or may not be as efficient as what's done, but with the Radeon cards, the Vega cards. But for high-end graphics, I believe that the NVIDIA performs better. The problem is that NVIDIA wants to write the drivers, Apple wants to write the drivers, and they both have valid cases for that. And so I understand why they're doing that, but I think that's what's stopping us. That's what's been stopping us, you know, forever is that control. So the fly in the ointment for the whole thing is that I can't put NVIDIA cards in. You know, I definitely would vastly prefer NVIDIA cards, but I think that overall the design within that limitation, which is kind of to me an understood limitation, it hit all the marks of what I was. You know what I was looking for. And I think that Apple now, you could argue from the Mac Mini or even down to the mini iPad as a little computing device, all the way up to we don't know how expensive, but probably as much as a pretty good car, range. Apple is now probably has the widest range of solutions of any manufacturer.
Really?
If you think about it. I mean, you got...
That was one complaint is that, you've got this super high end.
But you also have a Mac Mini, and you have the iPads.
For a lot of people, Mac Mini would be a great choice.
Mac Mini would be fine. And the new Mac Minis are great. They're not very expensive.
You've got the iMac Pro, which is kind of a higher end.
Exactly. The iMac Pro takes you up to $15,000 loaded. And and it's different now because the old iMacs, you could only accelerate them so much. But with with Lightning, you can put a lot of power externally. Thunderbolt 3.
Thunderbolt and Lightning. Very, very frightening.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But with Thunderbolt 3, you can externalize a lot of power as well. So it's not your iMac Pro can be very powerful. This is basically there's an overlap there of kind of a low-end Mac Pro and a going up to whatever that allows you to do. But the bottom line is with that kind of RAM, I mean, on my iMac, I don't have an iMac Pro. On my iMac at home, there is a shot I shot in India, the square that I shot that I use for photogrammetry tests. And I took 192 photos with a Canon. So it's, 24 megapixel, 192 photos. And I throw it into PhotoScan and Votoscan will churn on that for 4 days.
Wow.
So when you're talking, you know, so and I'm clear that, you know, I'm dying to get a hold of a Mac, you know, to go to fun. So I'm not going to buy a Mac Pro anytime soon. I don't have the money right now. But I'd love to see what a high end Mac Pro would churn through that. Yeah. And that again comes down to money, you know, of being able to process it. And I think that one, the biggest fear I had as a professional is that Apple was never going to give us a computer that
I was worried too.
You know, that we were going to have to move
basically
the PC.
Were cutting that end off.
Yeah, that high end. Well, yeah. You know, because I've bought Elementals for, you know, $65,000 each.
Yeah, we got one in the server case.
Right.
And two.
That was on sale.
Expensive. Right.
You know, and
we wait for the sales on Elementals.
But again, that was, you know, the issue there is that the that computer is worth every penny to what I was doing, you know, and it was a, you know, so it got me more work. It did work that nothing else can do. I got hired on jobs because I was the only one that had the correct equipment that was available. So
it's worth it.
You know,
it's worth it.
And, you know, there's not really any, people talk about replacements for those. There isn't a replacement, you know? And so the, in the same sense, those are Elemental servers. Yeah. And so the big thing is that for a Mac user, you wanted to know that you could go all the way up. You know, you could go all the way up to the top of the, you know, like no matter how big it gets, no matter how difficult it gets, I want to know that I can get all the way to that level. And, you know, so now we know that if we want to edit 8K, which seems big, but it's going to be a big deal next year. Like there's a whole lot of people that have to edit 8K in Japan next year because they're already broadcasting in 8K. They're already going to do the Olympics in 8K. And there's really not a lot of machines out there that are built for that solution. So, and again, I think that when we talk about professional, we're really talking about high-end computer graphics and video professionals. That's what this is built for. That it's not, I don't think it's built for anything else. You know, I think it's built for that market. If you're doing high-end 3D, if you're doing in high-end like 4K and above video, I think that this is the computer that you know that you want to have. And I think that Apple will probably in the first year sell as many as they make. You know, as many as they can make.
They may not be able to make
no,
very many.
I don't. But I also think the modular nature of this product probably makes it easier to make in mass. I think one of the reasons it's hard to pump out iPhones and iPads and you know the MacBook Pros sometimes is that the tolerances are so incredibly tight for these tiny little devices that the return policy is very the returns internally I think you know are harder and so I think that you know I think this is going to be good. My only hope is that they pull off that if they've set the stage of this is a Mac Pro, the thing that I hope in sometime in the next year or two is we see a laptop that takes the same approach. You know, like we're going to, because right now what we have is like a, you know, what we call a MacBook Pro right now is a MacBook Air Plus, in my opinion, as a graphics professional. Like if I want something that really is going to be fast, I'm not buying them. You know, like I definitely have fast processing laptops and they're Razer or they're somebody else. You know, they're not Alienware. You know, they're not Macs. You know, for that super high powered process. And so I'm hoping that Apple will take this as the, you know, what if we had a beefy, heavy, lots of battery, lots of power, lots of graphics laptop that professionals could go
with.
I
wouldn't hold my breath.
No, I can dream. I dreamed about this thing for
years.
I've dreamed about this for years and it happened. So it was like, you know, so and it, you know, and I, you know, I think that it is, it's just, you know, it's the best. I mean, I definitely think it's the best desktop made. You know, I don't, you know.
Would agree with you. I don't think there's anything that can
so,
this.
So, and I think that's where Apple should be focusing its efforts on the best of whatever area it's going to go into. Not a, there's no reason for them to go into pretty good.
I also think this was Apple a little bit flexing its design and engineering muscles and saying, look, if we didn't put any constraints on our engineering team and our designs team.
Yeah.
If we just said cost is no object.
We want to be modular.
What would you do? And yeah, and here's the requirements. You know, we've got all these. I mean, they hired professional videographers, artists, photographers to work at Apple to advise them on this. So I'm sure this team was saying, well, I mean, if you, it would be nice if you did this. It'd be nice if you did that. And they said, okay, we'll give you everything you ask for. And that's sure what this looks like, except for maybe NVIDIA. This is a very impressive piece of hardware. And I think a lot of the people who are butthurt because there isn't a less expensive version of this.
There is a less expensive version. It's called an iMac Pro.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a lot of enthusiasts like me. I would love to have this, but it just, it's out of my reach completely.
I would love to have a Ferrari too.
Same thing.
Instead, I have a used.
And Ferrari doesn't make an inexpensive Ferrari.
They don't make an inexpensive. Well, and Apple does. That's the funny thing is Apple makes an inexpensive computer. They make really inexpensive computers, and they happen to make a really high end one. You know, so this is more of a kind of almost a Chevrolet. I don't think Chevrolet is a good example, but it's having a, you know, there's a wide range of Macs that you can get, and they all run the same operating system, and no matter how big you get, there's one that will take all the money out of your wallet.
and the display, did that check all the boxes for you?
Oh yeah. I mean that display, I mean there, it is, the display is amazing, and definitely for the price. I know that sounds like an expensive display, but for what it's competing with, it is inexpensive. You know, to get a display, HDR display that has, I thought the XDR was a little much. But 1600 nits is very bright. what is considered kind of HDR, like an 8 quote unquote HDR screen nowadays is really 1000 nits. So 1000 nits full sustained is very high. There's not that many that are doing 1000 nits full sustained.
If HDR you were J.J. Abrams and you had some specular highlights on a Starship, it would blind you.
Well,
it would hurt.
It's also that it has to do with the brightness of every color. So everything is going to look richer.
It's not just the bright white.
No, because the more nits it has, the greater contrast between black and white.
Right.
So now you're going to have the brights are really bright, and the format, the PQ 2020, you know, format goes to 10,000, gamut. I mean, the 10,000 nits, but almost, I don't think anyone makes a monitor that's 10,000. I think that the highest I've heard of is 4,000 nits. But 1,000 is kind of considered that base.
It's not overall brightness that you're thinking about, though, or is it?
No, it's definitely not. Mike was saying it's not Rec 2020. It's not Rec 2020. It's P3. But it's but anyway, the
should it be Rec 2020? That's the high end standard.
This is good. I mean, it's enough.
P3 is enough. P3 is what,
you know, like it's
Rec 2020 is what movies are mixed to, right?
Well, no. Rec 2020 is just, it is the next HDR. You know, it's the HDR format.
Okay.
You know, that's a much still a larger gamut.
Right.
P3 is a slightly smaller gamut inside of that gamut.
And a Rec 2020 monitor would be,
that's like, yeah. Well, I mean,
20,000.
Again, there's, you know, a lot of these get really expensive, and yeah. So I don't know exactly what the numbers are, but it's a very, I mean, 6K, you know, that level of resolution, an accurate monitor, we think. I mean, that's what they're.
Well, it's Apple.
If it is what they're proposing,
accurate. Yeah.
If it is what they're proposing, you're talking about something that, for a creative professional, is the, you know, the best buyout.
More for a videographer than a photographer, or a photographer would want this too.
A photographer that's making a lot of money would definitely want that. I think that it's probably a little overkill for a photographer.
If you're Annie Leibovitz, you want this monitor.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think that,
and you can afford it.
You know, I think that the. If you can afford it, I mean, everybody who can afford it is going to want this monitor and the stand.
Is the stand really worth $1,000? I mean, you made the excellent point, which is there will be third party.
Yeah, I think that there's going to be a lot of
people. I presume that Apple hasn't done something that makes it impossible to make a third party stand.
Well, they built a Visa mount adapter.
So you would buy the Visa adapter and then.
Well, I think some people are going to probably. I bet you people will build ones that go right into that, don't need the Visa mount.
Right.
But the Visa mount will be the easy way for you to make it available to everything, right?
Right.
And so, so I think that's going to be fine. Anyway, but I think that, you know, a lot of people are going to want that monitor. I think that for photographers, it's going to be better than what the iMac does, as far as the monitor goes. I don't know if it, I don't know if the ROI is there just by itself. If you're shooting with medium format, you know, some of the brand new, really large, like giant medium format, and you're shooting in, you know, HDR, and, you know, those files could get big enough where having that kind of RAM that the Mac Pro has, you know, with that monitor could definitely make a difference. But I definitely think that, you know, where you're going to see this really take off is in the, you know, the really high-end professionals that are using, that want to use a Mac, but also want to do, you know, so the people who are using Maya and Cinema 4D and doing photogrammetry, doing LiDAR work, doing, you know, 8K video, 4K video, those types of things, compositing, you know, I think that those are all places where this Mac is going to make, you know, is going to pay for itself.
And do most of these people pay the extra $1,000 for the non-glare, the nano-textured glass?
I would.
Okay.
the biggest frustration that you have when you get these monitors is you get these highlights and stuff like that. Right. And the problem has been is that it's been
kills the color.
It's right, just, exactly. Yeah. And so what, you know, and I mean, I would look at it before I ordered it. I would want to see the monitor next to the other one and make sure that it doesn't drive me crazy like Matt does. But Matt is usually what we've done in the past because it was not as good, but it wasn't as, you know, the mirror reflection was definitely problematic.
Glare is an issue, yeah. It was Jim Dalrymple, wasn't it, Andy? I think it was who did see these at the event.
Yeah.
And was really impressed and said... And you saw it too, Lori. I don't know. Did you look at the standard versus nano texture? What did you think?
I did. Yeah. Well, I think the matte screen is incredible on this display. I can tell the difference between them, but only just in that I can tell that one of them is matte and one of them is not. But when it comes to, so, you know, I think we had talked about this before. There's almost like a fuzz that goes across a matte screen, yeah. And that does not happen on the screen at all.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's beautiful. In fact, if you don't see them, it's you can't tell at first. Is that a matte screen or is that a regular screen? You almost can't tell. It's only when you see the other one that you go, okay, now I can see the difference between the two, the shine versus the matte.
Right. Well, I'm not surprised. I thought Alex Lindsay would want one, but
I want one.
I just wanted to make sure.
And I admit that I'll probably wait until after the first version's out for a little while.
Yeah.
With any company, not just Apple, when they have a brand new piece of hardware that is a jump in form factor or a serious change, it almost always makes sense to just let it sit there for a little while.
I got the trash can Mac right away, and it was I had to send it back. It was terrible.
I did the same thing, and they never quite
worked right.
There was two that worked great, and that was the first one I bought was like really.
I sent the first one back.
And you sent it back, they fixed it.
Crash, and they fixed it, and then it never was perfect.
Exactly, and so I think I paid the price for that. The two that I bought a year after were fine.
Yeah.
The one I bought right when it came out was not fine.
Good advice. Have they? Anybody on the panel know this? Said where they're going to make this? Are they going to make it in Texas or?
I still don't know.
Yeah. That's kind of interesting. Apple is making noises. Foxconn's making noises about moving its production out of China because of the tariffs situation.
Yeah. It would make sense to move it out of China either way. I mean, not move it all out of China, but it would make sense to diversify your... There's a whole bunch of...
There's plenty of places you can make this. Well,
there's a whole bunch of dangers to your entire business, you know, that when you have everything made in one city.
Right.
You know, there was a lot of us... Do you remember... SR tapes, SR HD cam SR, which was the 444 uncompressed on those big cameras that I used to have. So the death of that tape had nothing to do with the demand. Well, it had something to do with the demand, but it was because there were two big machines. These are tens of millions of dollars machines, and one was in Los Angeles and one was in
that could actually manufacture
the tapes, right? And so like there's two of them, and they're kept, one in LA and one in Japan. So they once a year just calibrate them. They'd take the LA one and they'd send it to Japan. And so for about a week or two, the two of them would sit,
next to each other
while they calibrated them together. And then it would go back to LA. Well, that warehouse, wasn't very far from where the earthquake was. So when that happened, it flooded and destroyed
both machines.
It happened to be the one time that they were both in the same place at the same time. So suddenly, out of nowhere, there was no capability of making these tapes. And what Sony had to do is look at Like, what is the future demand? Because there's all this digital stuff coming out.
It's not worth it.
And they just, it didn't make sense to rebuild these multi-million dollar things. But by the time, you know, and I was, you know, I'd thrown those tapes away a long time ago. They were tapes, right? And they were selling. I was so angry. They were selling for like $1,000 a tape. Because there's people doing like sitcoms.
I have to have
They're like sitcoms, and the only thing that records them is those
I
tapes.
Have to
you know?
Have
so
these
there
tapes.
Were people like, you know, deleting old old episodes and trying to figure it all out. And so it was like mass chaos.
That's why.
So the moral of that story is having all your production in one place is a bad idea. And Apple can make some in India, but
yeah. Also, this situation with trade wars in China, and also the increasing control of the government over what businesses can and can't operate, and how they can do their operations. I don't think there's anybody who is thinking it's a good idea to pull out, but there's a good idea. It's a good idea to have. Why don't we encourage industrial manufacturing for our needs in India? And in Taiwan and in other places, because there's might be let's cover our butts, because in 5 years it might be a really, really bad idea to have all of our stuff being made in China.
And while Foxconn will say that they think that they should move to Taiwan, that would be a horrible idea, of course, for Apple. That would create such a political nightmare.
Foxconn's a Taiwanese company, though.
They are, but moving it to Taiwan makes sense for the for the president or the founder who is now running, you know, for office. Mm-hmm. It makes a lot of sense to bring Apple to there. But the financial, you know, obviously, as Andy just pointed out, China could very quickly tighten the screws on Apple if they suddenly saw a bunch of stuff going to Taiwan. I think that it'd be more likely. I mean, I think that Apple could spread it out.
You just got to tiptoe around all this. And you know what? Tim Cook's he's probably the right man for the job. Yep. According to a story in Nikkei Asia Review, Apple is thinking about shifting from 50 to 30% of its production capacity to somewhere else in Southeast Asia.
I think that's very prudent.
Yeah.
They have chips are made in Taiwan by TSMC. Mm-hmm. Samsung makes a lot of the memory in South Korea. So they already have, they're spread out pretty well in already, but assembly happens in Shenzhen, China for most iPhones. And
I think they've experimented already. Well, they've done some in India, they've done some in Brazil. So it's not like they haven't figured it out.
Yeah, Foxconn has facilities in both countries. All right, let's take a little break. More to come in just a bit. Andy Iannacco is here from WGBH Boston. Actually, there's a question in the chat room about what ship is behind you. And you don't have to look right now, but, well, you can if you want.
I will prepare that information.
When we return, we will find out what sailing vessel is a model in a case behind Andy.
Everyone's got to guess in the forum. You got to in the IRC now. You have to guess what it is.
Yeah, everybody guess what that ship is, and it will tell you. It's the schooner Bodie McBoatboat. also with us, of course, the wonderful Lori Gill, managing editor at iMore. She's in the kitchen with Lori.
I have a cute dog up there.
Oh yeah, look at that ceramic terrier or something. Yeah. And
nothing cool like a boat in a bottle, though.
And Alex Lindsay making a triumphant return to the program, at least a temporary visit. It's always great to have you. Our show today brought to you by Capterra. Capterra is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software for your business. Business software is one of those things that keeps Internet Explorer 8 and Microsoft Windows XP alive. So many people, you know, you wonder, yes, we do all the time. Why are people still running XP? Because the software that Joey wrote, the niece of the controller 15 years ago, wrote the program that we use. It's the only way we know to keep track of our inventory, and it requires Internet Explorer 8 because of that. Yeah, well, let's look, because there's lots better software out there, modern software, software that works better and is right for your business. And the best way to find it, don't Google it. Capterra. Capterra is free. It's a directory of all the best business software, thousands of products, 700 categories. The big names, you know, CMS, email marketing, IT service, SEO, workflow management, CRM, but also direct line of business programs like yoga studio management or dog grooming software. There it is, yoga studio software. It's and there's quite a bit of it, as a matter of fact. But Then it goes the next step because it's got filters, so you can narrow it down to how it works, whether there's a free trial, how many seats it supports, is it on site, is it in the cloud. Narrow it down, pick the apps you want. You could put them side by side in a comparison chart. But the best part of all, look at Zen Planner for yoga studios. Of course, easy facility here. Momo Yoga. See, I'd be tempted to use that, but before I do, I'm going to read. Look, there's 19 reviews of Momo Yoga by people actually reviewing it. Capterra is approaching now 1 million real reviews from real users. That's going to give you the best way to know if this software is right for you. And there's 1,000 new reviews every single day. It is the best place to find the software you need. Capterra believes software makes the world a better place because software can help every business become a more efficient, effective version of itself. If you're looking for better software, first stop, last stop, the number one place, capterra.com/MacBreak. CAPTERRA, capterra.com/MacBreak. Finding software is complicated, but you can simplify it with Capterra. And it's free. There's Zookeeper software. Okay. Everything you need. Capterra is software selection simplified. Capterra.com/MacBreak. Thank you for using that URL. That lets them know you saw it on the show. And thank you, Capterra, for your support of MacBreak Weekly. Andy, what is that boat behind you?
It is unlabeled, although it is a magnificent boat model. There is an even better boat model right next to it, however, that I can
look at
point
that.
To.
Well, you, what are you, and, in the schooner room?
No, this is the library that I choose to podcast from. My internet is back up and running. It's fine. It's just that I kind of
like
doing
it
from the
The
library is overlooks like a man-made little bay where they used to manufacture boats, and they would float them out into the harbor after they were regular. So this boat over there is the bark John Carver out of Searsport, Maine, presented to the library by a Mr. Roberts Parsons, and it is quite. And see, I thought that the one behind me was the USS Constitution, but that's not it. It looks like it's from the USS Constitution product line.
The USS Constitution Mini.
Constitution.
Exactly. Yeah. The one that they made instead of what the consumers actually asked for. But I'm actually now curious, and I will get that information for next week's show.
Oh, that's okay. I thought I asked.
Again, there's so many pretty things and artifacts in this conference room that I kind of like.
It's
now
really
want
great.
To know.
I swear,
I think I'm 6 years away from like offering the library corporate sponsorship.
I know. We'll be glad to plug them. Anything they want. Honestly, I think you've discovered the new place to make podcasts, your public library.
I need to go there next week.
Yeah.
I'm actually thinking about saying, well, what if I've got a whole bunch of podcasting gear that, like, after I upgrade, just basically put it in a box and wrote like an instruction guide, and after assuring the library that I get first dibs on the room at all times, of course.
Don't create
that anybody who wants to do a podcast, here's the microphones, here's a stand, here's some lighting stuff.
You could do it.
And here's a room.
Yeah. Are you going out to New England, Lori?
Sure.
Oh, okay. I got the impression you were gonna be visiting. Okay, good.
I think I was talking about just wanting to go podcast in a library so that I have better connection.
How about Sacramento? They must have some pretty. I bet
we have
a Carnegie.
Beautiful library out there.
We have a great old Carnegie Library in Petaluma, but it's no longer a library. It's now the Petaluma Museum. Yeah, it's kind of a fun museum. They have a lot of events there, concerts there, and it's a beautiful. These Carnegie libraries that Andrew Carnegie built in an attempt to get into heaven after being a son of a for years, they're really gorgeous. They're really nice. And many, many towns have Carnegie libraries now. So numbers time. We got a bunch of stories with numbers, starting with Apple says its devices can now be repaired in 1,000-plus Best Buy locations across the U.S., so that actually is really good news. There were only 270 Apple stores in the U.S., but with 1,000 Best Buys being official Apple repairs, we kind of experienced this here in Petaluma. There's a little hole in the wall, you know, one of those iPhone repair places that all of a sudden became an Apple certified place. And we were told by Apple when we had iMacs to fix or whatever, oh, yeah, just bring it to there. So that counts. That's like going to the Apple store. So this is very, very good news. 7,600 newly Apple certified technicians, same day repairs on iPhones and other products. This is Apple's, I guess, response to the right to repair movement, right? Well, all right, we're going to make more places you can
go official repair.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope it is. Go ahead. I just hope that it doesn't reflect Apple feeling as though now they're kind of free to restrict access to components to people who are not on their good list, let's say, because you need people who are also able to do repairs that are not condoned by Apple. And we're not talking about doing something, putting a phase converter inside the CPU. We're talking about, oh gosh, I'm sorry, this motherboard is this logic board is way too water damaged for this. Or perhaps this person who is willing to take a heat gun and try to reflow the solder on something or do a cleaning job and get it back working again for $50. Maybe this person should be allowed to try that if someone doesn't necessarily have $600 for a new logic board.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
Just don't put it in the toaster oven.
Yeah.
Apple really is one of the main companies fighting these right to repair laws state by state. And, you know, I think we should have the right to repair it. It's our hardware. Apple
it'd be nice if they could make things a lot easier, and having Best Buy as an option does help. It certainly helps open up the opportunity for people who just don't have easy access to an Apple store.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And that's a lot of people. Now there are 1,800 locations, third party repair locations in the U.S. That's quite a big improvement. Apple is the fourth largest gaming company. What? Wait a minute.
That snuck up on everybody.
A new line of business for Apple.
And remember, this is the fourth largest before Apple Arcade comes out.
That's right. That is one of the changes with iOS 13, that it took me a little while. I went to the App Store on my iPad, and I'm looking for the update button. And where the update button is, or was, there's an Apple Arcade button, and all it says is, coming soon. Which is not exactly what I've been looking for, but it turns out the update, you tap your picture in the profile in the upper right-hand corner. And it actually has a little red dot saying how many apps you have to update. The rise of mobile gaming and the operation of the App Store helped the iPhone maker beat other gaming industry mainstays, including EA and Nintendo. What? The top 35 public game companies generated, get this, $114 billion in revenue last year amongst them. 82% of the global revenue. Apple is said to have earned $2 billion from gaming. It's not that they make games. That's not what makes them a gaming company. It's just the fact that games sold in the App Store make them a lot of money. $2.09 billion. Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. That's the first quarter. Yeah. More than $10 billion for all four quarters. Wow.
And this is, you know, Apple's very well positioned, you know, for a lot of this stuff. My kids, I'm amazed at how much they play on Apple TV. You know, like I'll look over at the TV and they're playing, I guess, the story mode in Minecraft.
Yeah, that's big. Yeah.
On the big screen and they're sitting there playing away on their, you know, yeah, with their little controller.
What, do they AirPlay it over?
No, they have it. There's an Apple TV app.
Oh, on the Apple TV, yeah.
And so there's an app, and then they have a little controller that, you know, and they're sitting there just running away with it. And so it's, and anyway, they're great platforms for this. And I have to admit that they're not really pushing the platform very hard. Most of the games aren't. So there's still a lot of upward mobility. And I think that a lot of folks are going to have trouble getting squeezed between, as we move forward, getting squeezed between the new Xbox, which is incredibly powerful.
Scarlet, but not out until the fall of next year.
Right, so it's still coming out in a while, but if you're thinking about what you're going to buy and start buying...
That's true, you got budget, you got to think about it, yeah.
You got to think about, like, am I going to buy... Like, so I think that consoles are going to have trouble with that, and on the other side, you have mobile kind of really continuing to pick up speed.
Hmm. Especially when you think about, like, the curation that comes from something like Apple Arcade, it really will cater to a niche group of people who want a particular type of sort of indie mobile gaming experience. If Apple does it right, this could really be a big deal for people who like the sort of atmospheric games with lots of beautiful imagery that have puzzle games or have deep stories or something like that. You know, you're never going to get those sort of AAA games on mobile devices even using with your Apple TV or your Mac, but you can get some really fancy indie games that are really explorative and fun to play. So I think this could be a big deal for Apple to grow in the industry by using this Apple Arcade in the future.
I agree. We on iOS today, earlier today, Micah Sargent filled in for Megan Maroney, and we were doing the Apple Design Award winners for 2019. And there's a game on there that I just think is gorgeous called Elo, E-L-O-H. It's beautiful. It sounds great. And it's not the kind of game I think you would see if the iPhone and or iPad didn't exist. I just don't think you'd see that anywhere else. It's
right.
It's if you look at it, you go, oh, that's definitely an iPad game. You know, it's right. Unique. With both sound and imagery, and it's just gorgeous. It's really, really nice.
One thing that the cynical part of me has to mention in this is that now that when we see exactly how much money Apple makes off of gaming, that's a really great success story, particularly given how they're not known for, they're known for being, oh, you want a gaming platform, then you don't want something made by Apple. Their Mac games kind of stink. But it's something that we should probably keep an eye on as we figure out that the gaming companies don't just simply sell a game and then take the money and pocket it and then hope you'll buy the next game. The game that they sell you or they give you is a platform for introducing you to a brand new store of content and trying to get you to buy more content as you go and as you go and as you go. So it's one of those things that I sort of want to keep an eye on of Apple is really, really upset with Google and Facebook for taking your personal information and making money off of it for very, very good and logical reasons. But let's also mention that they don't make money off of that. Let's make sure that Apple is also going to protect its users against vulture-like game producers that are trying to increase game revenue. Let's see if they're willing to lose a lot of their own Apple's own incoming revenue from these games if it means that they're doing right by their people.
Well, it'll be interesting to see, you know, it'll be interesting to see how the price is really.
It's distracting. I'm sorry. I'm playing this game. It sounds like, what do they call those thumb pianos?
Like,
those African thumb pianos. Doesn't it sound?
Yeah, a little like an imbira.
Imbira, that's it. Yeah. It's like you're making a little imbira. You have to get these balls come out of here, and you gotta get them to go. where you want them. Oh,
I have seen the greatest minds of my life destroyed by my generation.
No, this is a good game. No, it's a good game. Holy cow, I got a crazy. There we go.
Funny.
Isn't that fun? It's like little monkey heads.
Alex, you might have to do the next ad read. Just speak to anybody.
What? What?
Yeah,
what?
Exactly.
Hello? Anyway, that's Elo.
But it'll be interesting to see like how the pricing model works once you have a subscription model. Like, is it going to be kind of all you can eat and you're just back to playing games?
When does
regardless
Arcade
of
come
having
out?
Arcade Plus. All that upgrade.
When does that come out?
I think they said sometime this fall.
Is that going to be? It must be an iOS 13 thing. I guess that's why it's in the App
Most
Store
likely.
Yeah.
I have a feeling we're going to see them drop at the same time. I can't imagine, especially when you see the beta and it says coming soon. I have a feeling that as soon as it's available to the public, that's when we'll see it.
They've got to, I mean, obviously they've got to have developers write the games. And and this would, like that Elo game would be a perfect arcade. Because I don't know, they charge a few bucks, but it'd be nice if they could, they'd probably make as much, but it would give you a chance to play it.
A subscription model also just what Netflix is starting to prove is that a subscription model also changes your expectations of the actual content. So there's a lot of things that you're happy to play as a subscription that you wouldn't necessarily be happy to pay for. Right. So, you know, if it's just part of the, so now you have a bunch of games that you can kind of lightly be interested in as opposed to games that you really feel like you have to get your money's worth. And that's what they found with that new Adam Sandler movie, for instance, with Netflix.
Why did that get so many people watching that?
They said that, you know, a lot of it lines up with the fact that it's casual. Like, it's just something like
it was a casual
Saturday
movie.
Night or Friday
it
night.
It was a totally like, casual movie.
My wife keeps on saying, hey, why don't we watch the Adam Sandler movie? And I'm kind of like,
murder mystery. So funny? I came home. Lisa's very careful about not watching stuff I might want to watch. Mm. So she watched it because I wasn't home. and it was as dopey as it looks.
My girlita wanted to watch it. I was like, how about we try Fauda? And she was like, what's Fauda?
That sounds painful.
It's, by the way, it's great.
Okay.
If you like Homeland.
I love Homeland.
Okay, so Fauda okay. is Homeland.
I can't say Murder Mystery is great, but it is apparently Israel. The most successful movie ever made for Netflix.
Well, the thing is they have an enormous amount of data. So Netflix has more data about how we watch films than anyone else in the world. And so what they figured out is how to build casual films. You know, that I don't think a lot of people would have gone out to the movies to see this. Probably almost nobody.
Yeah.
You know, so it'd be opening weekend of $4.2 million, you know. But as a casual, you know, they know that Jennifer Aniston and Adam Sandler are popular in their group, and they know that this kind of movie is popular in the group, and combining those together, you know, just becomes just adding good pieces of recipe.
Yeah. Also, the people who were of the absolute age demographic to make Adam Sandler a huge star for the movies that he made in the 90s, and to make Friends a huge hit, are now 20 years older.
Yeah.
And they're in their 40s and they're staying home. And so when you see someone that says, "Oh wow, that Randy Adam Sandler feller has a movie here," and this is exactly the sort of line that an older sister would use to put a younger brother in his place. I know from whence I speak, saying, "Oh, congratulations, Adam! I heard about how successful the movie is. You're a very big deal. So long as people don't have to pay money to see the movie, or even leave the house or the sofa, and the service tells them specifically that you have a movie out, that's cool. Wow, I'm impressed."
13 million people watched it in one week.
Yeah,
and this just will tell you everything. Adam Sandler plays a cop. His wife of 15 years, Jennifer Aniston, plays a hairdresser. The pair turned out to be evenly matched because although he's a cop, he's not a very good one. And although she's a hairdresser, she's read a lot of mystery novels. This is a review from the National Review.
I'm really confused. He's not in his street clothes. I thought that he's not willing to sign a contract unless he's allowed to just either do it while he's on vacation or not change out of his cargo shorts, t-shirt, and baseball cap.
Okay, they shot it in Lake Como, Italy. I think he was on vacation.
But it's good to know he still has his professional priorities.
He's got his priorities. We were talking numbers, more numbers. Apple has held on to 40%, 47% market share, even though the premium smartphone market is hurting. Apple's global percentage of it is almost exactly half. Not bad, Apple. Not bad. That's during the March quarter. Falling iPhone shipments did bring down the segment's overall performance. Samsung's more prominent, but nevertheless, iPhone still a significant amount of market share. That number three company there, that's called Huawei, and I expect that wedge to shrink quite a bit. Google and OnePlus, yep. 2%. So not bad. 47% for Apple. Is that of revenue? Let me see if I can figure that out. Or of units? Revenue, I bet, huh?
For some reason, I thought it was units.
Gotta be revenue. Well, I don't know.
No, because in premium, they're all pretty expensive.
Oh, okay.
But I think the problem with moving more units than Samsung.
Yeah, it's shipments.
I think that the problem for the premium market in general is that when you start spending that much money on a phone, you stop buying one every year. You know, like it is just like
I don't want to buy a new phone. I don't want to buy a new phone. Exactly.
I know, but if they put the right better features in, then I have to.
I have to.
I have no choice.
They make me do it.
Exactly.
I don't
make me a cheese grater phone.
That's called a red.
Yeah, he has the cheese grater phone. You don't want it. You still have it? Still rocking the ring?
Yeah, I'm supposed to send one of them to Andy, and I keep on. Here's the thing that's stopping me is I can't figure out how to make sure that I actually took the photos. I'll just send it to you because there's no secret photos on it. It's just that I was trying to make sure I backed them up, but I don't. The format is weird. So
I'm nothing but discreet. That was the first time I actually held one when Alex was in town. We went out to dinner and hung out for a while. First time I'd really had like more than like 5 minutes to hold on to one of these things. That is a really that super industrial NFG style of aesthetic. I like that.
Yeah.
It's just compelling.
It's like those police flashlights you can use either as a flashlight.
You really could. It's got like finger, you know, like you can really get a good grip on it.
You could really hurt somebody with it.
I was thinking of like, remember like those old like 1940s, 1950s like movies where the phones were made out of Bakelite and someone would be beaten to death with a handset of a phone?
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it reminded me with. Not that I will do that with this phone.
Apple Card. We don't know exactly when it's coming out, but
it's
getting...
all want one.
Do we? Do we really? Man. I don't want one.
Really?
It's getting closer. The retail workers at Apple now are getting them. So if you work at an Apple store, you might have one of those pretty, pretty Apple cards made out of titanium. Why do you want one? It's just a credit card.
It's more secure.
Yeah. Is it?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, because you're really not giving a usable number to anybody.
It's not more secure than Apple Pay on your watch.
No, but I'm saying if someone requires a credit card.
If they need a card.
I don't use a credit card very often anymore, but when I do, I'd like to have one. I mean, that's what this is really
There's
for.
There's no number this on card, the card. So somebody, if you pay for a restaurant meal, the Waitron can't somehow steal your card, right? I mean, that's...
And even if they got one, when they put it in and it gets the number, that
it
number
doesn't
is,
get your number.
There is no real number.
So you're right. At places I go where I need to use a physical card and it's going out of my possession, you're right. That'd probably be a good thing to have.
And it's just, and that's the last place. I mean, there's just a handful of places that I use a card anymore anyway, because usually I have to admit that if it doesn't take Apple Pay, it's probably the, other than a restaurant, it's pretty much the last time I'll come.
Yeah. Well.
No, I'm not cash only. I'm Apple Cash. Like, the funny thing now is I found that when you use your, if you use like your ATM as the backup for your Apple Pay, then you never know what's going to happen. Like, you put it up there and it might ask you for your ATM code or it might ask for a signature. There's all this BS that goes on with every register is different. I found out the reason they ask for your ATM thing is because if they can give you cash back, they legally have to do that. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't ask me for if I want cash back first, you know? And so if you just transfer money from your credit card to your Apple Cash. So I just move big chunks of money into Apple Cash.
Really?
And then I just put that on my watch, and then it's like you never
taken money.
There's never going to be any
bill.
There's never going to be me typing something out, and there's never going to be signing something. You literally just go boop, and you walk away. You know, and it sends you an email of what you spent and where you spent it, and the data is better than what you were getting before. So you're actually getting
better data. Thanks to intrepid Cub reporter Lori Gill, we do know how much the Apple Card weighs.
How much does it weigh?
Go ahead,
Lori.
Wasn't
that great?
That's your scoop.
It was 14.75 grams?
That's correct. So you got an Apple employee who sent you a picture?
Somebody that we work with.
Oh, okay.
I don't want to cause a stir here, but if you ask someone a question about how much something weighs in ounces and grams, and they have a scale on them that can weigh in those amounts, there are follow-up questions and perhaps urine tests that should be performed afterward.
I do have to point out, though, that this scale looks just like the stamps.com USB scale.
Oh, okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
I don't know what that means.
And if they bake.
Yeah,
Andy, if they bake.
So
I have a gram scale in my house because of baking, too. So.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. This one says 0.52 ounces, so Lori clearly did the conversion.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
I
so
love
cool.
the way this card looks. It's so silly to make a big deal about a credit card, but I love that minimalist look that just sort of... Oh, also, and I discovered that one of our readers had to point out to me that it's not embossed. It's debossed.
Wait a minute.
So,
okay. It's not embossed. Yeah. Doesn't stick up. It's
right.
Debossed.
I had never heard the term debossed before.
Convex. Perhaps.
So it's all embossing, if you ask me. But okay, fine. It's debossed. I guess.
That's luxury. Do you know how much it costs to like emboss the entirety of the card except for the Apple logo? That is like manufacturing.
Oh, that's a good point.
Flurry.
The card is both M and D bossed. I am deboss. At least that's what I tell myself. The card has an Apple logo on the front, debossed. The cardholder's name is on the front in black lettering. But Larry says we've removed the name for privacy purposes.
Basically right across from where that security chip is. That's where the person's name is.
Here.
And it's black with just like a tiny bit of like a goldish sort of.
Now I do want one.
Like background, background sort of accent to it.
Yeah, it is pretty, but I really am getting impatient with Apple. That I don't. I want to see them prove to me that they know how to use color. I'm not even really joking here. It's like, oh wow, look, another thing that is monochrome with absolutely no color, and oh wow, it's gray on dark gray. And now it makes me feel as though if I said I've just bought the company for $80 trillion, I'm going to give you personally a $1 billion bonus if you design me anything that has two bright colors in it. And I'm wondering if they'll be caught out saying, all right, we have to admit it. We lied on our resume about understanding how color works. We've finally been caught out after 14 years. It's just, it gets a little bit boring.
Your source.
Maybe they'll put out.
Go ahead, Lori.
Maybe they'll put out some exclusive candy, Mac candy color cards someday in the future.
or maybe there'll be like a new like market for like cases. So if you really want color, geez. You can get the Apple card case.
Oh, God, like the Apple card case. Oh, my God.
We got to shoot that. We got to shoot the ad for the Apple card.
Only $49.95.
Right, exactly.
And, of course, it's Pride Month, so get the Pride case.
There you go.
Your source, who shall remain nameless, said it took about a week to get his or her physical Apple card. But that the process to apply was very quick because Apple already knows everything.
about
a minute.
Apparently it takes just a minute because you're all of your information is tied to your Apple ID. So if you're using that same shipping and all that information, it's already there and you just have to add a couple of little extra things or edit it if you need to. And then you just hit the send button and then you get your response pretty fast.
Your source, you don't have to have great credit. Your source said she'd heard of somebody, we don't know who, with only a credit rated between 600 and 700. That person was approved, but they had a limit of only $1,000 they could charge. But that's not unusual with credit cards.
Exactly. But what I think is great about this, if you have no credit or if you have bad credit and you're trying to rebuild, which Apple is trying to position itself as, we want to help you do better with credit.
Yeah.
So if you start off by giving people with bad credit or no credit the opportunity to start over, that's how you do it. You accept those people who have poor credit scores or no credit scores, and you start them small and you help them build tools to be a good credit user in the future. So I love this idea. It's not exclusive. It's not only for people with a 750 credit score. It's for people who have low credit scores and they're trying to do better. And you know, with the app that comes with it that helps you track your budget and things like this, this could actually help people get, you know, do better with their money.
And I think that the nature of the way people pay bills too, it could be a lot easier with a whole Apple Pay. You know, like when I want to add money to my Apple Cash, I literally just go into Apple, you know, the Apple Pay and just go, I just want to move it from my ATM to my Apple Cash and boom, I'm done. You know, and this is one of those things where, you know, if you have to make a payment, it's going to be, I can imagine a notification popping up and then you being able to just take it out of some other account and pay it, you know, and just like, and make sure that it's sorted. And so definitely, you know, for me, fortunately, for a long time, my wife has handled all those things because I'm notorious. it had nothing to do with me having the money or not. No. It was literally just remembering to mail it or to look at it or to even open it or to go to the mailbox. Yep. All these things are very complicated for me.
You're busy. This is a low priority.
I don't do snail mail.
Honey, where are the bills? I think they're all in the mailbox. Actually.
Yeah,
where they've been for the last 3 weeks.
Exactly. Exactly.
The dog ate them.
Yeah, the bigger the mailbox, the less often you have to go.
That's
you
know, nice. I love it. I literally haven't been to my post office box in 6 months. I dread what I'm going to find there. I'm just scared to death. Yeah. Here's a nice feature of iOS 13. I don't know if this is in the public beta. It's in beta 2, the developer beta. It will use your iPhone microphone to adjust Apple TV audio sync.
Oh my gosh, this looks so. If it works, it's going to be so
brilliant.
Amazing.
It puts a little thing on your screen that says Apple TV will use your iOS device to measure how long your television takes to play audio and video. That is always an issue because audio decompresses faster than mm-hmm. video. Keeping it in sync is tough because, frankly, most television doesn't have SMPTE codes or anything in there. There's no way to synchronize it.
This is a tough thing everywhere. I mean, we're delayed, right? Our audio is delayed here to some degree.
We are troubleshooting this thing all the time.
Audio and video, to sync it on a broadcast truck level, there's a thing called what a lot of us use to do this in broadcast is a thing called a validate. And a validate is like, you can't even buy them anymore. And they're like, there's a new company that makes one that does the same thing called Hitomi. But what it does is it plays this special video and it plays a special coded audio. And then on the receiving end, it'll tell you how many milliseconds you're off. Now, the advantage that Apple has is they have two devices that are talking to each other.
They own both ends of the conversation.
So the Apple TV knows exactly when it sent that signal. And
you don't have to do anything.
So it's
this
really
is the
cool.
This is the dialogue. Apple TV will use your iOS device. It then plays tones from your speakers and says listening, and then audio sync complete. Wow. I almost want to get my sync out just to... I wish we could do that with Skype.
Yeah.
I hope that's dynamic too. If it's interactive and it can say, does that sound like about the right volume for you right now?
Oh, yeah.
And then when you have, there's so many shows that I watch where it'll be like, okay, now we're meeting here in this secret location because we're going to be discussing, and then commercial like, hey, President's Day. And it's like, could you dynamically keep the volume at the exact same level no matter what is playing?
I've heard of this thing.
To the Apple TV.
I've heard of this thing called advertisements on TV.
I haven't seen one.
My kids have barely seen one in their entire life. They've barely seen one.
But you're forced to watch Adam Sandler and Jennifer Aniston solve murders. Yeah. That's the only negative.
It's weird. I know that the theory amongst advertisers is that if it's louder, you pay more attention to it. But long ago it got to the point where as soon as commercials come on, I mute it. I don't even let it play in the background just in case it's like.
The theory is that when the commercials come on, they're expecting you to walk into
another room.
Like the kitchen or the bathroom or whatever. And they're like, hey, we want to make sure you can still hear us as you walk into the other room.
Hey, you in there making a sandwich.
But that is the working theory.
How about some adult diapers?
And folks who are monotaskers who can actually sit there and watch the video the whole time then are annoyed, but there's not that many.
And belatedly, I note the irony and I apologize to any podcast listeners who had the volume set correctly for my normal voice. And I said, muttering.
Andy did it all by himself.
So we call revenge.
We fix that with what we call compression.
Yeah. We don't compress as much as we used to. I wish we did. We used to compress the hell out of these shows.
I know.
I loved it that way.
I do like it. It's very radio.
I can't convince our editors to do it. It's not very NPR. There is a Mac OS gatekeeper vulnerability. It was discovered by a security researcher last month and is now out in the wild. Apparently an adware company, according to a researcher, Filippo Cavallarin. This adware company is now exploiting it. Intego, you've all heard of Intego. They're a malware research team that discovered the first known uses of Cavallarin's vulnerability in malware. So, update, I guess. They're disguised as, the malware is disguised as an Adobe Flash Player installer. Oh, man.
That's not new. I've heard of other exploits taking that same route. Yeah. The Adobe.
Oh, it's very popular.
Installer. That's an easy way to get into it.
I had a great conversation. It was a hard conversation, but on the radio show, an 80-year-old woman called and said, "My Safari keeps crashing," and so we did a little digging, and she had something called Mac Search installed, and then we did a little more digging, and she had another Mac malware. There was a bunch of Apple malware. You really can get malware on a Mac. And she said, you know, my 16-year-old grandson uses this computer. And I said, stop it. Don't let him.
Well, give him his own.
Don't let him. Give him his own. Well, that's what I said. Make your login for him. I guess it would be safe if he.
It's pretty sandboxed at that point.
Yeah, yeah. Apple Watch is doing great. According to Counterpoint Research, 22% uptick in 2018. Thanks to Series 4, which was the best-selling model, even though it was available only for one quarter in 2018. So Apple Watch easily tops everybody else, including all the rest combined, I might add. Yeah. It is not even close. Apple Watch has a dominant market share.
That's it's a great sign, particularly when you see that the new Watch OS puts so many more capabilities on the watch itself. Yep. Like being able to check out like previous workouts, not just the last one, but your workout history directly from the watch. I really hope this means that I hope that we are not too far away from them making it a multi-platform watch, because I really did give a lot of thought to whatever the next Apple Watch is. I might just buy it because I want a good fitness watch, and I don't even care that it won't sync to my Android phone, because this is just so head and shoulders above everything else in terms of capability, in terms of style, in terms of health features, that it really does overrule the fact that I can't simply there's no easy way to get it to work in any way, shape, or form with my Android phone.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that I have found that kind of snuck up on me, where I realized like how much I use my watch now, you know, on a daily basis, of everything from the timer to the, you know, activities to, you know, I get, last night, for whatever reason, watching TV, and I didn't think it was particularly exciting, but I noticed that my heart rate was a little high. You know, I was like, I felt a little stressed, and I looked down and my heart rate was a little high, and I was like, well, I wonder how it averages for the day. You know, and I just stretched it out. I could see all of it. Like,
is that cool?
Like, you didn't even think.
It
took me a second
to
back up and just realize that I can look at my overall average and how it's all working.
It's
amazing. And when I get into if I get into a pool, I just love the fact that it goes, hey, I see you're in a pool. Would you like to do some laps? You know, like you get this little notification. You're like, why? Yeah. Certainly. I will kill myself trying to do 500 yards.
And I'm with you, Andy, but I see no reason for Apple to make an Android compatible version, because any more they're making Android compatible iMessages. It's a great lock into Apple hardware.
I think the problem is, as someone who used to do cross-platform, it's just a lot of extra engineering, and so you have to really decide how much money am I going to make doing it. Like for us, we stopped doing Windows because there was a lot of support and not much uptick in revenue.
Well,
so that's the problem.
They did it with Apple Music. They did it with the iPhone, although that might be an old-fashioned sort of example. And it would kind of underscore the sincerity of their belief that they can help people's lives with this health device. It would kind of be a bummer if they were saying that we want to make Apple users live longer so they can continue to buy Apple products. I do think that this would be a very, very big thing for Apple to do. I think it's an important thing for Apple to do.
Well, let's just keep telling them that.
I still want my watch face. Like, I just want to go design my own watch face. That's all I'm saying. I don't. The Android thing would be great, but come on.
I like the
where's
watch
my faces. The watch faces are fine, but the thing is I would. I don't understand. I don't understand.
I don't get
why
it,
I can't design my own watch face.
I
don't get it. All right, let's take a break, because we've been going on and on for hours, and I think it's time to. But everybody,
we're having so much fun.
Everybody, turn out another commercial, and please don't. Our show today brought to you by Gazelle. Actually, this is a commercial you're going to want to listen to, because if you have iPhones, if you have iPads, if you have MacBooks, you know, and you want to get the new one, this is a great place to go. Gazelle is the trusted online marketplace for buying certified pre-owned devices. See, this happens all the time with my kids for some reason. They break their phone. Or maybe you lost your phone. Or maybe you just don't want to pay full freight on a great device. Go to Gazelle. Devices are available at a range of prices depending on condition. Fair, good, or excellent. Everything from the iPhone 6 all the way back to the 6 through the iPhone 10. I'm pretty sure they even have the 10S. Yeah, they do. Variety of Samsung Galaxy phones. They offer MacBooks, Air and Pro, and iPads, standard Air and Pro. Whenever you get a certified pre-owned device at Gazelle, you know that device is in great working condition, because it goes through a 30-point inspection. And if there ever is a problem, they're backed by a 30-day return policy, and there is no restocking fee, and shipping is free. So you're really at no risk, and you're going to get a great product. They're all sold without carrier contract, but they do work with all the major carriers, locked or unlocked. It's up to you. Actually, I guess they're not locked, but you can get them completely unlocked if you want. Financing is available on all devices. they use Affirm. So that means you can check out. As you're checking out, you can say, yeah, finance this over 3, 6, or 12 months. Makes it very affordable. Gazelle has an amazing selection of quality pre-owned devices. A lot of students, just anybody on a budget. There's no reason. Everybody knows you're overpaying when you buy something brand new. Save money, get a great device at Gazelle. Check out Gazelle for competitive offers, too, when it's time to sell. You know, fund your new tech with your old tech at Gazelle. Gazelle.com/twit to buy certified pre-owned devices. If you use that address, by the way, you'll be letting them know you heard it here, which is important, but you'll also get 10% off your purchase. That's really important, too. Gazelle.com/twit. Gazelle.com/twit. We thank Gazelle so much. They've been supporters forever, it seems like, on MacBreak Weekly. Alex, I don't know. Do you want to do a pick? We haven't had a real...
I have a pick.
Full Alex pick in a long time.
I go through a lot of iPhone cases. This is the best one I've gotten so far.
Oh,
so
I want to know.
And I don't say that lightly. Now, part of it is because I'm doing so much stuff with Apple Pay and everything else, it makes it easier. So this little guy has... So here's my...
Your wallet.
My wallet.
It's got your... I would not have known that, which is a good thing.
Exactly. So it's a pretty rugged iPhone case. This is a Vena iPhone case.
V-E-N-A.
And what's slick about it is, number one, is it's rugged. Number two is it'll hold quite a few little cards in the back. So the back here is, if you can see it, flips open, and it's magnetized, so it just kind of closes.
So it's not a hard shell.
It's metal, so I have a magnet in my car, and I just go, set it up,
and it just
snaps to the
car.
But
the bad thing is you can't do wireless charging.
I can't, but I don't do that anyway, so I don't care.
Oh, okay.
I don't even like wireless charging on my watch. So anyway, so...
you have to wireless charge your watch.
I do. I don't like it. I don't...
Oh, you don't have to
like
it.
I don't like doing it.
You only have to do it.
Okay, I have to do it, so I don't even like it there. So I don't...
Vena.
And so... So anyway, it... but it'll hold 4 or 5 cards in the back. You can see that I got some Whole Foods cards, which are very useful. And then the only card that I use, which I won't show on the air, and my driver's license. So it's got this little like area in the back here, and it works super well. It's easy to get stuff in and out, which was one of my big problems. And then the back case, let's see if I can do this right, will actually fold up into a little mini.
Oh, it's stand. A kickstand. I like having kickstands.
So the little piece in the back actually works really well, and it just has all the bits and pieces that make it great. The only thing I would add to it is a 1/4-20 mount.
Everything should have a 1/4-20 in Alex's world.
It would be absolutely like a...
Because so then you could put it on a tripod.
And I could put it on a tripod. Yeah. Like that would be like the only thing that they could add to it that would make it better, in my opinion. So
military-grade drop protection. Because as you know, in the military, people drop their phones all the time.
Well, when they're...
Flip leather cover guard, slot holder, kickstand compatible with the iPhone. In this case, it's the XS Max. Which is weirdly less expensive than the XS version. I don't know what that is. $5 less. Comes in black.
And it's not particularly expensive. Like I've,
no,
most
it's
of the 20 ones that
bucks.
I bought in the past have been like 60, 70
it's
bucks.
It's a 35th of an Alex.
Yeah, exactly. So
it's cheap at twice the price.
There you go. That's the best I got.
That's good. All right, Mikhail, you have something for us. A pick of the week, perhaps.
So
we were talking about the iPad. You're going to explain this
we were
game
talking
to
about
me.
The, we were talking about the Apple Design Awards, and it triggered a memory for me. I've been playing this game lately. It's called The Gardens Between.
So
it's,
Micah Sargent and I tried to play it. We couldn't figure the thing out.
Oh, it's amazing. It's a puzzle game. So
yeah. That's probably why we couldn't figure it out.
So you play the game by... going either forward or backward in time.
Right.
So then as you pass by, you have two characters. One of them carries the light, and he triggers things by bringing this light with him everywhere he goes. And the other person alters time. So he stops time, actually. So when you stop time, other things happen. So your job is to get to the top of each one of these structures and place this light. But there are things that you have to do to get there that require... So you'll be walking along up a pathway and you'll get stuck. And then you go backward in time And then you use the guy that either has the lamp, you put that lamp on something and then suddenly something is triggered, or you use the other guy who stops time and does other things through it. He stops time so that some other action takes place. And then you walk forward through time again. And then everything completely changes at that moment when you alter your events leading up to that time. So you have to walk forward, then walk backward, then walk forward again after you've made these changes to it. And it starts out pretty simple and then gets so much more complicated that you start getting sort of confused as to, like, what am I missing here?
And well, you're right. I'll share this to John was just showing me what I should do, which is screen mirror this so you
screen
can watch
mirror
it.
Yeah.
And then you can tell me what I'm doing wrong because I'm kind of stuck.
All right.
Okay.
It's such a beautiful game and it sounds really good too.
We are on this island and are they moving? I don't understand. There's boxes of stuff and then mm-hmm.
So you're moving forward through time.
Here's the brother and here she is with the empty lamp holder. And then mm-hmm. here we oh look. There okay. So should I pick this up? Yeah. So now mm-hmm. I don't know what's happening. Now do I go backwards?
So now you yeah. See, not yet. So you see how this little guy is kind of jumping forward
yeah,
in time?
Yeah.
Oh, you need a light. You need a light for him first. That's the problem.
Oh.
So back up.
So I blew it, but I wish all games had this feature.
Where so, but then
you
watch.
Could go backwards. There's the
see
light.
What just happened?
Yeah. Oh, now there's a light.
Now it grabbed the
light. Oh.
And then now you go forward in time, and that thing now has the light that it didn't have.
I put the light holder in there, and then I had to go back to get
it. Now you grab the.
Now I have to grab it.
You
okay.
You got to grab the thing.
There we go.
Yeah.
Now I got the light and then I put the light in here. And then what does the brother do? What does he do?
So that one will stop time and make new events happen. I think you saw in the trailer, he causes like a VHS tape to fast forward or something like that. His role is sort of, altering the events that take place when time is frozen.
Oh. So now I put my carrier on there. And what do I want it to get shot into the air?
Oh, all the way back to
the beginning?
Yeah, and you can go all the way back to where the bridge stops. Not all the way to the beginning, but where the bridge changes.
Oh,
so
man.
Sometimes you think, well, I don't get it. Nothing's happening.
The gameplay is really swiping your finger back and forth.
That's all it is and the puzzle aspect of like figuring out, okay, well, what am I supposed to do next?
Right,
so as you
right.
can see, moving forward through time, there's now a water that's shooting into that bucket. So, well, what is that?
What is that?
Let's jump
in there. Okay. This is called The Gardens Between by the Voxel Agents. Mm-hmm. You can buy it in a variety of formats. It's available on Xbox and Steam. But I think it's really made for the iPad. I mean, this is just a natural environment for it. Also, Mac on the Mac, $20 on the Mac. I don't think it's that expensive though. I think
it's $5.99 or $4.99.
It's inexpensive for the iOS. For the iOS folk.
I played on my iPhone, and I think it's fantastic on iPhone too.
Even that small screen. Okay, good.
Yeah, it's just well designed that your fingers don't get in the way. Because you're only like moving forward and backward through time, and sometimes tapping the screen.
Right.
So it's a very minimal amount of your finger movement on the screen. It's pretty nice that way, and you can play it in landscape or portrait. So if I feel like playing the game one-handed, it's a little tighter, but I can still play it if I want to.
It's a subway game, so you can hang on a strap and play the game. $4.99 on iOS and iPad, $19.99 in the Mac Store and other platforms. The Gardens Between, an Apple Design Award winner for 2019. Andy Anatko, Pick of the Week.
Before my pick of the week, I do have an update. I remembered that often on old-timey boats, they would write the name of the boat right on the butt. And so this is the Charles W. Morgan, often referred to simply as the Morgan. It was a whaling ship named for owner Charles Wayne Morgan and built in 1841 in New Bedford by the Jethro and Zachariah Hillman Shipyard. It was in operation through the 18th century and early 19th, 20th century.
You got that all that on the butt?
It made 37 voyages during 80 years of service from a home port of New Bedford, Massachusetts, during which it brought home 54,483 barrels of whale oil and 152,934 pounds of whale bone. And fun fact, the crew actually survived a cannibal attack in the South Pacific. So I think I've addressed your questions.
Thank you.
Origins of this.
I am impressed.
Of this ship. Again, we do this all for you, and please keep that in mind when you consider using our sponsors' merchandise.
Support your local public library as well.
Exactly. Okay. Two quickies. One quickie and one really goodie. We got a lot of people excited, I'm sure, about installing the public beta of iOS 13, and it really is very cool. Just make sure. One tip is to go to the iOS beta subreddit. I think it actually is iOS beta, because there's lots and lots of people who are talking about things that don't work. So, and there's actually also like sort of a crowdsourced list of things that don't work, like Evernote. Oh dear, that doesn't work at all. And also the Delta Airlines app doesn't work on the phone or on the iPad. So definitely, I encourage you to think about installing it, because it's really, really cool. But realize it's beta and visit this place first to make sure that there's no deal breakers that you can discover in this subreddit. I'm sorry that I didn't mention it during the when we were actually talking about it. But hopefully, all of our listeners stay into the bitter end of the show. But the star pick is this: the Raspberry Pi 4. The Raspberry Pi, I legitimately think, is one of the most important tech products on the market today. And I mean important, not just, oh, look, it's new. Oh, hey, look, it's kind of cool. I mean that they're doing like amazing, impressive work, the Raspberry Pi Foundation. If you haven't really used or heard of the Raspberry Pi before, it is a tiny single board computer. If you're not watching on video, it's about the size of a credit card studded with, it's like a bare board studded with ports and stuff like that. And you can install like a real desktop version of Linux on it and run desktop open source apps on it. If you want to use it as a media server, you can install Plex or all kinds of other media servers on it and use it to watch or serve video to other computers on your network. If you want to build robots, if you want to build anything, it is just it's the goal of the Raspberry Pi Foundation has always been to make computing more accessible to anybody. Not only make it affordable, because this is $35, $35, and they've kept the price like the constant over the years by simply added features, but also make it so that people who maybe want to build stuff that doesn't exist, like a weather station, security stations, robots, Internet of Things, but they can't afford to develop their own computing hardware. You can, because one of the hugest features of the Raspberry Pi are these like open just pins on the side of it, these GPIO pins that you can just connect components or electronics or sensors or anything to. It's just remarkable. And you're not just being thrown into the woods. There was a time over the winter where I needed, in my old 100-year-old building, there was a pipe that kind of needed to be checked to make sure it wasn't going to freeze over. And it used to be, well, if it's 25 degrees outside, I'm going to check to make sure the temperature of that thing is okay. I got kind of tired of doing that. So I actually took a Raspberry Pi I had in a drawer, because I have several of these, and just bought a $1.34 temperature sensor off of eBay, off of component, just plugged it into the right pins on this thing, wrote a little script, installed a web server on it so that anytime, anywhere in the house, and then later on anywhere in the world, I could simply check the temperature of this one pipe and get the answer back in degrees Fahrenheit. So if you have this in your house, there's just so many things you can do with it. And for $35, it's such a fun thing to play with. Now, Raspberry Pi 4 is such a leap above what they were doing before, because they've added the leap in performance is about twice to four times as big as what the Raspberry Pi 3 was able to do. The new CPU is in gigahertz. It's not that much faster, but the architecture of it is so much better that it can run things typically two to four times faster. And because now they have this much, much faster CPU with much, much faster channels, that means that they could now finally put USB 3 in this. So there are two standard USB 3 ports next to two USB 2 ports. The Ethernet port that's always been there can now support full gigabit Ethernet. It just wasn't. They just didn't have it because the old Ethernet port was connected technically to the CPU via USB 2.0 channels. It was pretty slow. Now it's full USB 3.0. has now two, not just one. It used to have one HDMI port. Now it has two, and it can support two 4K monitors at the same time. It's, oh my goodness. I only got it this morning. Unfortunately, there was they were going to send it to me last week. I signed an NDA. It was actually only released yesterday. I only got it this morning, so I was only like playing with it for two or three hours. But as soon as I signed for it, it was like, oh, let's see if it'll do this. Let's see if it'll do this. And I can't recommend it highly enough. Another big change they made is that it used to be that there was only one model of the USB, the whatever the credit card sized one was. Now they are, it's the same model, but you can buy it with for $35 with 1 gigabyte of system RAM, or 4 gigabytes, which goes all the way up to $55. Oh my God, $55. But the difference is that if you are using it like as a desktop type computer, that means that when you're running Chromium, which is the open source version of Google Chrome, for instance, it means you can have kajillion windows open at the same time. It just responds a lot better. Again, I can't recommend this highly enough. Just buy it and then start messing around with it, because the Raspberry Pi platform has been around for so long. A million people have come up with each 10 really cool, interesting ideas and projects to do with it. And you'll get it. It'll be in a drawer. Oh, that's right. That's the thing that the exuberance of that idiot Andy Anatko like convinced me to just go buy one. Now I had no idea what to do with it. But then a month later, you're like, ooh, that's right. Wouldn't it be, we're going on vacation for 2 weeks with the kids and the internet is really crappy. What if I were to like put this in a $5 Raspberry Pi box to make it nice and pretty, and then just simply load up a 512 gigabyte flash drive with movies and music and stuff. And so we could still just watch all the movies we want just by plugging this into the hotel TV room through the HDMI port. And then you're like, oh, okay. I'm still not convinced that Andy Anatko is not a total idiot, but there are some areas in which his advice is actually kind of useful.
When do you make the decision about whether you're going to use Arduino or Raspberry Pi?
The difference is that if you want to turn something on and it immediately does something, you want an Arduino or some other kind of embedded component like an ESP chip. Because this is a real like desktop type computer, it takes a little while for it to boot up and to actually be able to do things. Whereas the controllers won't be able to do things probably like host a web server. I might be wrong, but typically not stuff that's as sophisticated as that. As soon as it gets power, it starts doing the thing that you programmed it to do. And a lot of these controls are really cool. I'm considering as a pick of the week something that I picked up from Adafruit a few weeks ago, but I don't want to use it until I've actually built something cool to demonstrate with it. But the thing is, you write a Python script, and it has a USB 3 port, and you just simply like mount it on your Mac desktop or whatever desktop as it appears as a storage device, and you simply copy a Python file to it and then disconnect it without having to compile anything or anything. And it just simply turns on, and then a half second later starts running this Python script you wrote. So it's you can do all kinds of really interesting bad craziness with stuff like that. But that's the difference between Arduino / embedded controllers and what's called a single board computer like this.
Yeah, the Pi really is a full computer.
Yeah, yeah.
I would say in about 20 years, you'll be able to get a Mac Pro for $35.
It just or at least you can buy today's Mac Pro for $35.
Yeah.
Oh, and emulation is the other thing that's
Raspberry
really cool.
Pi.
Yep. You can run like classic Mac software in emulation on a Raspberry Pi. Yeah. You can also
just
run
ARM processor with, you know, two 4K monitors, $35. Right. It's kind of remarkable.
No, it's
and amazing. They don't charge Apple prices for RAM. It's only $20 for two extra gigs of RAM.
Right. Well, I have a summer project that I think I'm just going to do it in Arduino. But it was like one of those things, like it was right on the outer edge of what the Arduino can do. Yeah, and so that's what I was asking Andy.
We'll chat later.
It's complicated. I'm trying to attach it to and things and process and
they also do you can also get Alyosha running on a lot of these single board computers as well, because they've tried to open source that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Hey, that's it for our show today. Andy Anatko is in the Boston Public Radio WGBH Boston this week.
Yes, Thursday from 1 to 1:30, you can tune into WGBH, Boston's NPR station, or if you don't use terrestrial radio, you can just stream it live or later at WGBHnews.org. Nice.
Alex Lindsay, at Alex Lindsay on the Twitter, LINDSAY. Keep up with whatever he's up to. Most of it's top secret.
Most of it is these days, but yes. But hopefully I'll be able to come over.
We love having you. Once in a anytime
while.
You
right
can
now
make
I got
it.
A little time, so it's going
to be great. Yeah. And the wonderful Lori Gill, lead singer for Sick Burn, but also managing editor at iMore. I don't know which is more important, to be honest. I'm not going to try to make the decision. Always a pleasure to have you, Lori. And thank your friend for letting her use her place.
I will. Her nephew or her son just came home while we were podcasting, and I had to mute and say, "Hey, can you go in your room for a little bit?"
Aww.
I'm sorry. He was very
Mom,
nice about
why
it.
Is there a punk rocker in our kitchen? Mom. We do Mac Break Weekly every Tuesday. Usually we try to make it about 11 a.m. Pacific. Sometimes we're a little late, depending on how long iPad today goes for, iOS today. 11 o'clock Pacific would be 2 p.m. Eastern time. It would be a 1700 UTC. Or is it 60? I don't know. My math is so difficult. 7 hours later, it would be 1600 UTC.
Sometime in the evening.
Yeah. Here's the deal. You can go to twit.tv/live and watch or listen live to anything we do. Or ask Alyosha or Guillermo or Shlomo. You can almost always just say, hey, play Twit Live. And you'll get the live stream, or play Mac Break Weekly and you get the most recent episode. It's a magical thing. We also have on-demand versions of audio and video at our website, twit.tv/MBW, or subscribe. That way you'll get it automatically the minute it's available. Find a podcaster. Put us down for every week for Mac Break Weekly. Now time to get back to work, because as Alex Lindsay is wont to say, break time is over.